Record the meeting as we always do. Just wanted to let you all know that the recording has started. So thank you all for coming to our last meeting for Shack this year. You see, we have a little thank you, just appreciation for everything you're doing to serve our community. And we will just go ahead and get straight to business. So I would like to invite Dr. Linda Macias, SciFair's Chief Academic Officer, to start our presentation.
Okay. You'll be my clicker? All right. I'm trying to see where to stand. I'll stand right here. Good morning, Shack and guests. How are y'all?
Good.
Thank you so much for inviting us to come and share with you some information regarding our human sexuality unit at middle school. So I'm going to start with what we hope to accomplish today. So we're hoping to be able to give you some familiarity with the resources and the process that we have in place as it relates to our human sexuality unit in 7th and 8th grade. Not 6th, but 7th and 8th grade. Good. So I wanted to give you a little background about how we got to this program itself. And I can give you accurate background because I'm the one that actually started the process of re-looking at our human sexuality unit and the process that we went through. So I'm gonna start by telling you that, number one, this curriculum was adopted in 2013. And so it is a curriculum that at the time, the board asked us to look at something different. I'm gonna tell you how all that transpired. Asked us to look at something different. And so they asked for the Shack to convene about the human sexuality unit. As you know, the Shack is an advisory, serves in an advisory capacity. And so they asked for the Shack to look at it, and then the Shack made a recommendation to the board, and then the board is the one that actually adopted the Scott and White program. So back in 2013, I had just been appointed to my current role as a Chief Academic Officer and Associate Superintendent. I was brand new to the position. And the first thing I tackled was the sex ed program for middle school. A program had just been adopted. I mean, literally, just been adopted right before I was named to my position. It was called It's Your Game. And we never even taught it. Okay, so no lessons were ever taught with this program. So we started having the parent meetings and that information, and the parents were voicing their opinion that they weren't comfortable with this program. And the program, I would say that the program was very animated, and so it wasn't just straight back, you know, scientific based information. There was a lot of animation in this program, and they weren't comfortable with this program. And so the board basically said, let's scrap it. It was my recommendation that we scrap it, and so the board agreed with that. And so we went back to the Shack, and so the board said, go back to the Shack. I see Dr. Bosque back there, wave. She's a medical doctor, and we've always had, through this whole process that I've been involved with, a medical expert that has been a part of this program. She was actually a part of the program as we moved along. So we brought a subcommittee together, and the first thing that we said was, we need parent voice. We need to hear from the parents, and we need to find out, what do they want? What do they want? What are their, Ms. Stanley. What do they want? What is their voice? What are they wanting? What are they comfortable with a program? And so that's the first thing that we did. We sought the parent voice, and we did it through a survey. So here's what the parent voice shared. They wanted, because remember, we don't have to have a human sexuality program. Okay? We don't have to have one. That is a board decision whether we have one or not. And so that's one of the things that we asked. The parents said yes. The parents said, we need a human sexuality program. We asked at what grade levels. And they told us at 7th and at 8th grade. And so then we asked them, basically, what do you want? What do you want in it? And so they said, we want a program that says that we want students to wait until marriage to have sex. That's the ask of this program. And then they said, we need a program that talks about contraceptives and about STDs. That's important. And we even said what grade levels. And so the contraceptives and STD lessons are in the eighth grade program. You're going to hear a little bit more about that. They're not in the seventh grade program. And so that was a parent voice that we received from our parents. So that's what we came back to the subcommittee with, and we said, this is what the parents are asking for. They also wanted us to have something that was consistent among all the schools. So what this parent's child was hearing in seventh grade at school A was the same as what this parent's child was hearing at school B. They wanted some consistency in there. And so the committee looked at, they wanted something that was scientific based, so they didn't want just anything. They really wanted something medically scientific based. And then being able to opt in to the program was important. Now back in 2013, the state didn't talk about opt-in. The state talked about opting out, and you could opt out of any program that you had. And actually, we had an opt-out program before the 2013. When this program was put in place, we not only did an opt-in way back in 13 for the program itself, we did it by lesson. Because we thought it was important for parents to be able to determine, I'm okay with lesson 1, 2, 3, and 6, but I'm not okay with lesson 2 and 5. And so parents to this day are able to opt in to either everything one by one or to 1 or 2 or none of the program itself. So that was important as well. And so we got the subcommittee together, and we looked at 5 different programs. And we were looking to make sure, and I've got the spreadsheets, so I have the whole binder. You know, they say the retention cycle of things, and typically 5 years when we're keeping things. Thank God I kept that whole box, because I've got that whole box with all the activity that went on. And so the committee looked very closely at each of these programs. They looked at the text, because there are health texts. That the whole human sexuality program is related to health texts. But in this case, the human sexuality program really is in the direction of the board. The board makes the determination. All the other texts, like math, reading, science, there's no opt-in or out. Those are required for us to teach. In this case, this is one that parents could choose whether to be a part of it or not. So the committee looked at all the texts related to the human sexuality standards, and then they looked at those parent priorities. What are the parents asking for? And so they looked for a match for all of that. And so, again, there were 5 programs that were evaluated, and then the Scott and White program, the wellness sexual health program, is the one that was selected. And number one, it was completely scientific, medical based. That was a huge criteria. The terms that are in there are scientific, medical based. The language is scientific, medical based. This is probably one of our only program where the lesson scripted is provided to the teacher, and the expectations of the teacher read that script. That is not the way we function inside here, guys. We have experts teaching our kids, our teachers. And while we have a scope and sequence for our teachers, and we have a curriculum that we provide for our teachers take that information, and then they adjust, modify to meet the needs of the class. With this program, you are to read the script word by word. That is the expectation. You do not deviate from that program. And that was part of the piece. We wanted to make sure parents were comfortable with what we were providing and how we were providing, and that it was consistent among all the different campuses that we have. Let's see if I forgot anything here. So as you hear from my 2 colleagues, you're going to hear from Dr. Heather Bergman, who is the Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction, and you're going to hear from Christian, who is our Coordinator for Secondary Science. You're going to hear the consistency. You're going to hear about what's in our program, and you're going to hear about the parent voice, and you're going to hear about how we try to get all of that together. We certainly, with something that's sensitive like human sexuality, we want to make sure that parents are making the decision for their child, right? Because what's right for my child may not be right for your child, in your opinion, or your child. So we want to make sure that parents have the information and are able to make an appropriate decision for their child, for the whole program or for a component of the program. Now, as we move on, I'm going to ask you, because you're going to have a lot of questions, if you will please write your questions down and hold them. And at the end of the presentation, we will be happy to answer any questions that you may have. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Bergman.
You're good. You were so good. So I wanted to share with you a few things about the Texas Administrative Code and about the Education Code, as well as our curriculum texts. So we wanted to provide for you the information in the Texas Administrative Code. So if you want to go and reference that, you can see that is 74.1. And we also want to provide with you the information in the Education Code, so you could refer to the requirements regarding human sexuality instruction, and that it emphasize abstinence. You will also hear Christian share with you our required science texts, which are part of the required curriculum in 7th and in 8th grade science. Because our 7th grade texts we use both times. And so we're going to go through those pieces. You're also going to see that this program focuses not only on the medical, but also the emotional, the legal, and the financial aspects of health risk behaviors. And Christian will be sharing the individual lessons with you. We thought it might be helpful to share with you the overall timeline that happens actually each spring as part of this process. So each January, and this happens every January, even for experienced teachers, experienced instructional coaches, and administrators who have been on the middle school campus before. Each January, our district coaches train the campus instructional coaches over the program. We feel it's very important that we make sure and we revisit each component so that everyone is on the same page. Also in January, a parent letter is sent home to 7th and 8th grade, the parents of 7th and 8th grade students, which does include a link to an informational video. You're going to see a portion of that today when Christian is sharing specifically about the content. We feel like it's really important to, over-communicate, so campuses also are encouraged to utilize the school messenger to notify parents of the informational parent meeting, as well as let parents know about the letters that are going home. Historically, the parent Q&A meeting has been held face-to-face. The last 2 years, it has gone virtual. We keep saying there's some good things that have come out of going virtual, and in this case, the parent meeting, the Q&A, was actually recorded, and so we were able to share that with campuses, with the expectation that campuses also share that Q&A video with their parents. The Scott and White curriculum, as some of you may already be familiar with, that's used for the unit is under copyright. And I wanted to explain to you a little bit how that differs from our curriculum and our textbooks. So those of you who have a student in CFISD, you probably are familiar that your student can log into the MyCFISD, and there's a little backpack that has all their digital textbooks in there. We actually buy individual student licenses for those textbooks based on whatever courses or classes that student is enrolled in. So our textbooks function a little bit differently. The Scott and White curriculum, we actually buy the individual binders. We're actually required to buy the binders for each teacher and for our instructional coaches who are monitoring or delivering the program. So we wanted to share that with you. So beginning in February and extending through April, parents are invited to schedule that appointment and come to the campus so they can actually go through the binder at their own pace. We know that not every parent is able to come and visit the school in person and to view the curriculum. And so one of the things that Christian is going to share with you is that the informational video that is provided, the link to all parents, does include the more sensitive topics that parents might have questions about, so they can hear that information in that informational video. In April, all teachers, again, whether you're experienced or not, receive training in delivering this curriculum. The training is conducted by district curriculum coaches to ensure that there is a consistent message and also to reinforce those expectations that teachers read the provided script with no adjustments. This expectation is also reinforced during team planning that happens on the campus with the campus instructional coach. So we want to make sure we have consistency, and so that's part of multiple conversations. The seventh grade unit does begin in April, and you'll see the eighth grade unit is presented in May. The unit is always delivered by a trained, certified teacher. So you may say, well, what if a teacher is absent? We have teachers that get sick or are not at school for a variety of reasons. If a teacher is absent, our campus instructional coaches who have been trained are often the individual that steps into that class to deliver the content. We know sometimes we have multiple teachers who are out, particularly during the last couple of years that are challenging. So both 7th and 8th grade teachers are trained, and many times a campus may swap out and bring an 8th grade teacher in to teach a 7th grade lesson if that teacher is out. Again, the expectation is that lesson is always delivered by not just a certified teacher, but someone who is also trained. In addition to that, the delivery of the materials, like with all of our curriculum, is monitored by campus administration and by the instructional coach through visiting the classroom. Campus administrators are also trained each year. We have principal meetings as well as curriculum meetings, and that is revisited with our campus administrators. We remind them about the process. We also remind them about the expectation of the delivery of the curriculum and reading the script. It's very important to make sure everyone's on the same page. And so this cycle of meetings happens every year, regardless of whether you're a new experienced teacher, a new or an experienced curriculum coach, or a new or experienced campus administrator to our middle schools. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Christian, who's going to talk in detail about the entire program, the communication pieces, and specifically share curriculum information with you.
And I'll be the clicker and presenter, right?
Oh, do I need to click for you?
I got it. So now we're going to dive into more detail into the parent letter. And we brought some copies. If you would like to see those after the presentation, you can certainly get one. But essentially, the parent letter has a detailed description of the topics that are addressed in each of the lessons. Now, in addition, it shows an outline of the sequence that is followed for each of those lessons. And then it also gives important information about how the parents can access that curriculum and review it at their campus. Now, this letter also communicates important information regarding parental involvement in any of these opportunities. The second portion, I want to emphasize that this letter is available in English, Spanish, and Vietnamese. And the second portion here talks about the permission slip. So as you recall, parents must opt in order for students to get instruction in any of these topics. And for those students who do not opt in or do not return a permission slip, they're typically sent to the library, which functions as a study hall, so they can get caught up in any other task or whatever they're working on.
We're going to pass out to the SHAG membership a copy, just because it's kind of hard to see that. So we're going to give you a copy. That way, it's easier for you to see, and you can look at it.
And we brought some 8th grade, 7th grade letters, but both of them have essentially the same format. The only difference is, you know, those topics and timeline given. Thank you. So as you start looking into the second component in there, which is a permission slip, I guess it is important to emphasize that students are not penalized for not participating in the HSU curriculum. And as I mentioned before, parents have the opportunity to either fully or partially opt in. And again, if there's not a permission slip return, then there's no instruction. And of course, parents can always go back and change their mind and options by resubmitting a permission slip. And as a reminder, the HSU curriculum is optional, and the anatomy and physiology tech, which is a required science curriculum, is the actual portion of a lesson that is tested. But we'll be providing more details about the test in the next few slides. So another thing that you see in the front page of that letter is the code to access that informational video that Dr. Bergman was referencing earlier. And I'm gonna show you a preview of the most sensitive information related to the STD lesson and all the stuff. But of course you have the code and the link to view the entire video if you would like to.
So it's on the front, on the first page of the packet, it's that QR code.
Let's check the volume. Okay.
These two diagrams are representative of the images that will be shown in the curriculum. They're very cartoonish, and again, we do not have any graphic images or videos showing STDs or any other things. Some of the terms that will be addressed in a couple of the lessons are here. And again, those lessons that talk about sex and STDs revolve around abstinence. That is the foundation of this curriculum. There is a unit or a lesson on STDs for each grade level. And these are some of the topics that are addressed in here. Again, for this particular content, the focus is to provide standard definitions, some statistics, and a summary of each of these. This is another example of the slides that students will see during lesson four. So it talks about sexual activity, right? So in order to understand sexual activity, we must define these four terms. And I want you to know that this is essentially the scope of what students will be exposed to in this curriculum as it relates to sex. So it is important for them to understand these definitions, and in order to be able to understand the correct terminology and the risks that are associated with each of these forms of content. And again, there's no additional details or diagrams related to these definitions. The only thing is that these terms and words need to be defined to understand some of the other material, but there is no further discussion or, again, any diagrams or additional details related to this. These are the definitions, and that is it. And again, the curriculum is very scripted, so teachers stick to it, and this is essentially the scope of what will be addressed.
Okay, and again, you have that code and link if you would like to watch the entire video. It's there for you. So now we're going to look at the topics outlined for each of the grade levels. And again, it is important to note that this curriculum is focused on the medical, financial, legal, and emotional factors that are related to health risk behaviors. And as you can see, the majority of its lessons are focused on topics that are unrelated to sex or STDs. And those few lessons that address STDs and contraceptive methods are really promoting abstinence and the need to wait until marriage before having sex and all this stuff, like Dr. Macias mentioned earlier. And I believe that depending on the letter that you received, you can see the scope of those topics as well. So if we look into more detail as far as lesson 3 and 2 go, you can see that the topics that are covered in each of these lessons do not get tested. So only the content that is related to the anatomy and function of the reproductive system, which is a required science content, is what we're actually testing during this test. And as you know, the state doesn't have an opt-in for any of the required tests or texts, and it's the same case for state assessments. You don't really get to opt-in. So again, we only test a small portion of that unit, and that is covering the science curriculum that we're required to teach, which goes back to Tech 7.12B.
Christian, I want y'all to have both the 7th and the 8th grade letter. You'll see it's the same, except that the contraceptive and STD you'll see in the 8th grade one. Just to make sure you have it. I want you to have it all.
Okay, so now we're going to look at some of that tested content from each of those lessons. And, you know, as part of that science curriculum, students are expected to be able to label diagrams as well as to use vocabulary and terminology associated with the parts of the reproductive system and its functions. And we have some sample test questions. So you see the material that is actually tested. And again, the content of the test is just based on that small portion of units 2 and 3 respectively. And it is based on, again, the anatomy, physiology of the male and female reproductive systems, which cover that required science tech curriculum. And I'll give you a few moments to rate those questions. Okay, so we also have some samples from the 8th grade test. And again, as you can see by reading these questions, the only content that is tested is that related to the anatomy and function of the reproductive systems. And again, that is specified on the science text that we are required to cover. Thank you. Okay, so now we're gonna be looking at the actual lesson structure and the layout, which is pretty much the same for every lesson that we have in the HSU. So the typical lesson includes a few components that have teacher background information, and then the PowerPoint slides that are used as part of the presentation, and the teacher script. And again, as Dr. Macias and Dr. Bergman mentioned earlier, the HSU instruction is highly regulated, and teachers are trained to stick to the script because we want them to be using that scientific and medical terminology at all times. And this information is also available in the informational video that you have access to. Another component is the note card knowledge, and this is completed after each class with the purpose of, you know, assessing, understanding, and answering any questions that fall within the curriculum. So teachers only answer questions that are in the curriculum. Let me make that very clear. For any other questions, teachers advise students to talk to an important adult. That could be a parent, guardian, or even the school nurse. And this is also available in the informational video. The last component of the typical HSU unit is this Let's Talk packets. So these are to be used as a tool to promote student-parent communication. This portion of the lessons give you an overview of what the lesson was addressing, and then it gives you some questions that can be used as conversation starters. And of course, parents have discretion to decide whether they want to engage in dialogue with the student or not. And we know that some students have both parents at home, maybe one, and they're very fortunate. However, we know that many students do not have a parent at home. So because of that reason, our Let's Talk script mentions an important adult, right? Emphasizes talk to an important adult. And then the actual Let's Talk lessons talk about talking to a caring adult. And you have the structure of those Let's Talk lessons in the informational video as well. I want to go over some of the highlights, get summarized and wrapping up the content from the slides that you have seen up to now. So parents must opt in for students to receive instruction. Okay? And throughout this process, campus are very diligent about maintaining accurate records of the opt-ins. Students are tested over the required Science Tech 7.12b, which again, it's a small portion of lessons 2 and 3 respectively. And something that we do is we provide parents with all the same test preparation materials. So that's a packet that goes home, and it has the same opportunities for all the students to be well prepared for that test. And again, teachers are trained to stick to the script. Why? Because we want them to be using that scientific and medical terminology at all times. And as they mentioned earlier, we have those trainings that take place throughout the second semester that involve teachers, curriculum specialists, and campus administration as well. And lastly, it is important to have that clear communication with parents throughout the process, because we want to be able to answer questions and address any concerns that may be happening. And as you may have seen, we have different methods to share that information related to the curriculum. And we also make those letters available in 3 different languages.
What are the languages?
Spanish, English, and Vietnamese. Now, here are some of the adjustments that will be taking place for the 22-23 school year. We're revising and editing the language that we use in the parent letter just to add clarity regarding the actual unit test, which is more like a portion of a lesson from the entire curriculum. And as we mentioned throughout the presentation, the only components that we test are those related to the anatomy and physiology of the reproductive systems, because that is part of the required science deeks, 7.12b. And then the second bullet in there, we are enabling the change because due to questions that we have been getting about the lessons that include STD and contraceptive methods, we contacted the publisher, Scott and White, to get permission to make those entire lessons accessible to parents so that they can review that without coming to school. So currently, curriculum instruction is working on figuring out the details on how that's going to be happening so that we're still in compliance with the copyright requirements from the publisher. And for those of you that would like to see the entire curriculum, we are providing these opportunities on the designated times that you see up here. If you would like to review the curriculum, when you get to the Instructional Support Center, my assistant will lead you to the conference room, and then you will have the opportunity to review that curriculum at your own pace, and I'll be able to help you answer any questions that you may have.
And Kristen, and so please make sure you note these, because these are the binders. So this is the program. There's a seventh grade one, and there's an eighth grade. So you want to make yourself with a little bit of time to go through them if you want to come and see them. And then those are the times. This is for the SHAC membership. Okay, so you want to make sure you identify yourself. And I know Ben will talk more. You want to identify yourself as a SHAC member when you come there, and there'll be a list there too. Just check off. And then you're welcome to come and spend the entire time frame that's there looking at these two binders. We'll be in the conference room, and we're going to borrow some from the schools. And so you can take as much time as you want within that time frame.
Okay, so now we're going to open the floor to any questions you may have.
Me, sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you for working on making those accessible for parents without going after the school. I appreciate that. Does a school teacher teach it? The students, the normal school teacher, teach the curriculum?
Yes, it is a teacher of record.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This is... I'm just going to ask this because a parent asked me this. They wanted to know if there was a way, because they said their students were getting embarrassed when their teacher taught it, if there was a way for like a counselor, a nurse, or just someone who they didn't see every day teach it. That was just what a parent had asked me, and I said, okay, I'll ask. And then the other one I have is on the reproductive terminology for the 7th grade lesson 3. Was that where it had the slide that said anal sex and oral sex? What was that in regards to?
So that slide regarding to the definitions of sex, it's on the STD lesson. It's not part of the content, reproductive and or the anatomy and physiology portion of the science tech. It's completely
so
a different lesson.
In regards to STDs.
And that would be lesson 4 on both.
And Ms. Gannon, thank you for asking that question. But that's been a question that's been brought up. I hope you heard Christian share that for the rest of you, that part where that slide where you saw anal sex, oral sex, vaginal sex, that is not in the lesson that has the anatomy and physiology that's tested. That is only in the lesson regarding STDs. Because if you're going to teach about STDs, you're going to talk about how you can contract STDs, right? That's the only place. The other thing that I hope you noted and you heard him say is that the definition that was there, that's it. That's it. We're not teaching kids how to have oral sex. We're not teaching kids how to have anal sex. This is not a how-to. This is strictly those definitions, that was it, and it is to make the connection about how do you contract these diseases. Okay, because that's a question that we've had as well. And actually, I had a couple of parents that I visited with who they were upset about the fact that was there, that they didn't know about it. But actually, if you click on that video on the first page, that's why I wanted y'all to see the video. I hope it was very clear about what's in it. We just want to, and so really, if y'all have any suggestions about how to make it even clearer to parents, we will. When I finished talking to this one parent, I said, what else can we do to make it clearer? She said, limited, I had the information. I just didn't look at it. And so, but if there's anything that y'all can think of that we can make it a little clearer to parents, we're open for that. We're open for that. We want to make sure parents have the information that they need to make the decision. You heard Christian talk about, we already had the two lessons that were approved by Scott and White. He went back and asked for the lessons on STDs and contraceptives. And so we're going to figure out a way to, I haven't figured out how yet, but those will be available to parents next year where they can see it in the entirety. Okay, so they'll be able to see that lesson in the entirety next year.
And so that was the parent who had asked me, they said that their child was embarrassed to ask their regular teacher questions. And she had said, is there a way for a counselor or a nurse or someone who's not the teacher they see face-to-face every day teach the lesson so they could ask the hard questions without being embarrassed?
And I don't have an answer for you right now because we're teaching it to all 7th and 8th grade students. Our big thing has been to be consistent with it. Mm-hmm. And really, we encourage as much as possible the questions be reserved for the parent or the trusted adult. So, and we're hoping teachers are guiding them that way. That's what we're instructing teachers to guide them that way.
Dr. Macias, I'd also share for that topic that our nurses, when they teach the 4th and 5th grade human growth and development, we hear that same thing sometimes, that they're even embarrassed to ask the nurse. So again, we have that, you know, caveat for all students to go to that relationship that matters, so that you're asking the parent, the guardian, or the trusted adult, because people feel discomfort at every level with this topic sometimes.
And that's really what we want to guide them, back to the parents, back to the trusted adult with their question. Because you might answer differently, or, you know, the nurse, somebody might give more detail than what you're comfortable with. So we really do try and swim that way. Yes.
So two things kind of related to your question. I thought I saw in the presentation that there was like an anonymous thing that the student can write, like, I have a question about this today, that they can turn in. So that might address the question that you had. Is that did I understand
card.
That correctly?
Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I thought that was really good, because a lot of times I'm sure most kids don't want to ask a question in class, so that would be really good. But my question about that was, how are the teachers directed to respond to questions if it's all scripted? Do they have like an FAQ thing that they use, or how do they respond to questions if they're supposed to be reading a script?
So they gather all the cards, and then the next day, before starting the next lesson, they look at the questions that they're getting, and if the answer is directly found on the script, they use it to respond. And if it's not, then that's when they say, we got this question, you will have to seek an important adult, such as a parent, guardian,
so
or the school nurse.
Yeah, everything goes okay. back to the script.
I see. Thank you.
So I have a couple of questions. Are the boys and girls still separated during these lessons in the 7th to 8th grade level? In the 80s, when I was in CFISD newer.
So they're separated at the elementary school level, but 7th and 8th grade, we're still having them together. Because we consider that at this point, they've been together for, you know, 8-9 months. So we feel like they have a good relationship, and we want them to be able to feel comfortable with this type of topics and be able to, you know, have conversations and things like that.
Okay. So just several of the things that I'm hearing, it would be nice as a community member just to be able to have a discussion. And I know that in a large forum like this, you know, not everyone has the time, ability to sit through that, or the desire to sit through that. So you had mentioned a subcommittee. Is that still in existence for the agency?
The subcommittee was to determine which program to use.
Okay. Is there any possibility for two-way discussion for that to be reinstituted? Because I think it's an important enough issue, especially if you're making changes for next year.
Absolutely, because we're not changing the program, right? We're changing a couple of things within the practice of it. So it certainly can be discussed as a suggestion, because that's the practice. It really is not the program itself. So we can talk about it today if you'd like to after we're through with this and get feedback from the group, or you can call me or Kristen and we can talk about it then, whichever you feel most comfortable.
I just think it would be important for it to truly be feedback from the community and from parents, because I love how you guys said, you know, you researched 5 programs and you had feedback, and obviously there was discussion involved in that. And you know, just because we're on a time constraint here, there's not always
I don't know if we have time
in-depth
for
discussion
that
ability.
For discussion, or you want to discuss it the next month, or what are your thoughts?
I mean, I don't know how much time we need to take. Yeah. So I could be doing it really quickly. I think we have a few minutes to discuss it if you want.
Okay.
We can definitely put
okay.
it on the agenda moving into next year as well.
Okay. Well, let's see if there's any other additional questions, and we'll come back in just a second. Are there additional questions? Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say thank you again to. Because the biggest feedback I get is the lack of transparency. It's like having a shut door. You automatically think there's nothing bad behind that shut door because you can't open it. So the fact that it's becoming more available to the parents and the community, I think, will be one of the strongest points of getting that word out and getting that confidence built back up. So I just wanted to say that. But is there an option for co-ed? Because one of the things I'm noticing is we know how middle schoolers are, and how they can tend to tease one another, especially if they're in the same room and talking about body parts and seeing open leg pictures of the female, how the young lady might be, you know, because they're just coming into their hormonal levels, that kind of thing. And to be in that, that's one of the strongest things I hear, even in this day and age, is so-and-so is now telling me that I have a, you know, all these words, and I'm like, oh, goodness, okay, I'm sorry.
Well, if we chose to separate the boys and girls, they would still be seeing all of it. They would just be seeing the male part of it, because again, these are the science texts, and really that part doesn't even need to be in the human sexuality curriculum. Because it's the text. It's the text, guys. Remember, the only piece that is tested here are the required science texts. We chose to embed that component through the human sexuality unit because it kind of flows in there. It doesn't have to be in there. It doesn't have to be in there. In fact, we're looking at the revisions to the curriculum that we do every year, and so we may just pull it out of there. And it's just part of the regular science classroom tested. Nothing gets separated in the science classroom that is tested, or the reading or the math or anything else. Everybody is in there together. And so just kind of keep that in mind, that with the science text, they don't have to be in here. We might just put them, we can just put them right back where they used to be in the science classroom. And so really what we'll have here is everything, including all the lessons, but it will not have the science text in there, which is the human sexuality unit. So the component that you're asking for, they would see it in the textbook. It's in the textbook.
And I think you've answered my next question. The TEA guidance that came down concerning requiring testing in this level, I talked to my SBOE member, I talked to 3 SBOE members, and they sent me the ruling from Commissioner Morath that says, because I showed them this, mm-hmm. and they said no, and I wanted to bring it here for more information and I could discuss it so that you all could have some eyes on it. But
can I share what you're talking about there with the group?
Yes,
so there was clarification regarding that with the human sexuality program. If a district chooses to have one, nothing is to be tested. Nothing to be tested. Well, we don't test anything except that one piece that is the science text. And so people have been asking, and that's the reason why Christian shared, we need to be clear and say the lesson and not the unit. Because our verbiage says unit right now, so it kind of implies that everything is tested when you say unit, even though we say lesson 3, whatever, and just say lesson. But a way to as I mentioned, if parents are feeling that we're not within the law because we're testing that little piece, an easy way to fix that is we don't have it in there. It's just part of the science text. And so now it just kind of continues. We're probably going to look at that for this next year. That way there's no issues with that. Yes, ma'am.
So I just want to share an alternate opinion about that. So you know, I understand what you're getting at, and there's concerns about middle schoolers and the way they talk and all that, but that we're not going to overcome that. I mean, that's just the way that they are. And I think it's great that you're linking these topics to the scientific aspect that they need to learn as part of their curriculum. And it doesn't change them learning the material if you put it over here. I think it's important for them to understand with the STD unit, like you mentioned, how you get an STD so that they, you can't say we're going to talk about STDs in May and we talked about anatomy in September and expect them to put all that together. So
And we probably won't do that, Allison. The way we'll probably handle it is that we'll wrap up our science text lesson, which includes anatomy physiology, and then the next component will be the human sexuality program. So it'll really flow right into it, except it's not a component of it. We're gonna teach it like right outside of it, just like we do all other texts. Just that one piece.
And as long as it's themed, but I'm not sure what that accomplishes in terms of people's concern about learning about body parts.
It really speaks to Teresa, to what Teresa was saying regarding when people are reading the guidance that was sent from TBA, it says nothing is to be tested. And so that just resolves that. It doesn't fall within the human sexuality unit, so nothing will be tested now. It's just part of the science text. But we'll teach it science text and then human sexuality unit. So it won't be anything old.
Given that proposal, though, are you still allowing parents to opt in, opt out? I mean, are you still
not of the science out of the science text? They do not. Parents do not get to opt in or out of anything that's required, as far as instruction from the state. This is different. The human sexuality unit kind of stands on itself, where district can choose to teach it or not teach it. So nothing else will be. Only those pieces you show about the anatomy and physiology, that is the only piece in this whole thing that is part of the science text. That's it. Everything else stands with the human sexuality unit. Actually, we're only taking questions from the SHAC membership. So, sorry.
Is this taught again in high school, or is that completely separate?
There is a component in high school, Ms. Gammon. It is in health. So that actually is a health course.
Okay.
But even their parents signed it, opted for it.
So you're going to take an entire different curriculum for high school?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Yeah. And at some point, we got to come back to you guys, because there's a whole health book and stuff that we're going to have to come back to you for. So we just haven't not ready for that yet.
Okay. I did have another question, too, about the testing. I mean, I think you said in your information you're clear with the parents about what gets tested. Is it clear also to the students they're only tested on this piece and they don't have to worry about, you know, retention of the other material or preparing for a test on the other material?
Absolutely. Like I mentioned before, all parents get access to the same review materials in preparation for the test. So that packet clearly outlines this is the content that you're going to be tested on. And that's
so that the students know they really need to pay attention in lessons 2 and 3, and then...
And then remember, the reviews are sent home. So they're very clear in the reviews, too, what they're responsible for.
I just want to make sure we're keeping that clarity with the students in addition to the parents.
Yes.
Is it a grievance? If it's a grievance, if they go into role play in class and go off script?
Is it not meeting our expectation? Absolutely. If we learn about that, then we handle that and we take care of that. So if you know that, we can research it and we can go back.
Can you just reinforce it in your training?
Could you?
Yes.
Question. I don't think we heard
the question was, is it a grievance if a teacher goes off script and is role playing? So the answer to that is, if a teacher is off script and is role playing, then we need to know that information, because then we need to go back to the teacher and have a conversation and with the leadership there to make sure that everything is followed. Christian shared with you that not only are the teachers trained, but the administration gets a training as well, because just like any other curriculum, the expectation is that they're monitoring. So they're walking the classrooms, they're walking the building, they're monitoring. And so that way they know what they should be seeing. So all it takes, Teresa, is a call to me or to Dr. Bergman, the campus principal first and then to Dr. Bergman or to me, and we will follow up and we will make sure we have those conversations.
If you'll just share it in training, I'd rather not, but if you just share that in your training, I put it out here to partner and say, could you reemphasize role playing isn't part of the...
Absolutely, what we're gonna emphasize is nothing else happens. Nothing
male,
else.
Female child,
So, absolutely, we will emphasize it even stronger because we already do. We say, read the script. Read the script and nothing else. But we will continue to do that. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I would like to submit that we consider as a group to at least discuss the separating of boys and girls for portions. And I think that would be in the discussion of what that might be. I mean, anyone who's had a sixth grade girl start her cycle knows that it is an extremely difficult thing to go through. And so at the junior high level, seventh, eighth grade, I don't think it matters. It is such a delicate issue. And so I think possibly we could serve them better in some ways. And I would like to submit that maybe we discuss that as a group at some point, and then also to just reconsider some of the discussion of the terms of the, there were four different kinds of sexual touching or whatever. I personally think that not all of those are necessary. I think they could be addressed in a more generic way of, you know, any kind of genital touching could spread an STD. I don't necessarily think that we need to be quite so specific at that level because we have to remember that they are exposed to more education in high school. So I just want to consider those two.
Okay. I'm going to let Dr. Bosque speak and then I'll open that up.
Sure. So I wanted just to mention the first comment that you had about separating the boys and the girls. So I was on the subcommittee back in the day, and we had the same discussions about what would best serve the students, and we felt like it was good for them to have a healthy discussion about these topics that are more sensitive at this age so that they can be respectful students and respect each other and not use those terms that are inappropriate, so that they can use the proper medical terms, the proper scientific terms for their body parts. And we also felt like it kept the classroom with a more professional demeanor because they were a little bit more reserved instead of having a group of boys who are seventh graders and want to start messing around and calling all kinds of silly names. And it also helped with the eighth grade coursework when they did talk about healthy risk behaviors and healthy relationships so that they could know what might be a more risky relationship and how to be able to pick a healthy friend, somebody who's not drinking or not smoking. So the curriculum really addressed health risks. And that's why we really felt like it was an excellent curriculum for our students, because it didn't just focus on sex. It was broader and talked about how important it was to choose friends that were making good decisions, people that are going to be a good support system, how to make goals, both short-term and long-term, for future success. And then you had a second question, and I think I already forgot it.
The terminology.
Just maybe
or
yes. The specificity
right.
of some of the terminology.
The specificity of the terms, because that was another hot topic. They're legal definitions as well as medical definitions. We want to make sure that our students, for one, know what sex is in the different forms so that they can be protected against abuse. I see children in my practice, unfortunately, who are in elementary school and have been anally raped by boyfriends of their mothers. We see a lot of things that have happened that are very, very ugly that we don't like to talk about. But the children need to know that that was sex and that that put them at risk and that that was not right, okay? We need to know that children can get infections from touching different places. And unfortunately, if you just say genitals and don't define what are genitals, I guarantee you there are students that don't know. So it does have to be blunt,
and defined medically, scientifically for them to actually know what their risks are. And so that's why it's there.
One of the real focuses of the group was also remembering that what we're choosing is for 118,000 students.
Yeah.
So it isn't just for one particular household or one pocket of the community, but something that serves all students in all circumstances. And we know that not all of our students are coming from the same place or have the same education in their household or even have the same safety in their household.
Yeah.
And so we were always keeping that in mind, that this was for the entire school district. And really, it's in charge of the SHAC to always remember that what we're choosing and what we're looking to implement is for all students.
So, and then remember, Ms. Johnson, that if that is a lesson, because that's one lesson,
right,
that you as a parent do not feel comfortable. You would rather teach it yourself and use whatever terminology you want. You can do that.
But
you
am
can
I
make
provided
that
the opportunity? I think, Christian, you had mentioned something about some of the curriculum is going to be given if a parent opts out. Some of the curriculum would be given in a packet to the parents. Is that only the TEKS material so that they can be prepared for the testing?
At this point, we only provide the TEKS testing material as a packet. And we are allowed to send home the parent talk handouts, and we have been doing those for those lessons that are opt out. So that way the parent has the discretion of using those if they want.
Was that addressed in the letter that's an option for parents to be able, for the lessons that they opt out of, to be able to get the parent talk? Is that, or is that in the end packet,
but,
the parent
talk? Definitely in the video, informational video.
Oh, okay.
We'll go back and check, Ms. Johnson, just to make sure that it's in there. But also remember that we got permission to be able to have the lesson on STDs, which is the one, that's where that is. The STDs and the contraceptives, we got permission to be able to have that available to our parents. So we're still trying to figure out how, but they'll be in a secured place where with a login or something, the parent can go in there. So you'll have access to that as well for that lesson.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you said, you know, it has to be for all 100,000 plus students, and I think that addresses it. Whereas in the past, it hasn't quite addressed it. So I like that we're on top of that.
Thank you. I'm glad.
And they've always had everything accessible at the schools. Every year in the spring before we would start the HSU unit, we had a parent meeting, and it was at the very center, and everybody was invited, and I actually would attend and answer questions too, so that everyone felt comfortable. And, you know, Christian or Deb Hill, whoever was the science coordinator at the time, we would show every slide that could, you know, potentially be something that a parent might feel uncomfortable with, because we wanted everyone to know this is what is out there, and, you know, you can either opt in or you can opt out, but you will have to know the anatomy for the test, because that's for the state.
So that video that you can use a QR code, that's actually what we would share at the parent meeting. And, you know, with COVID, horrible, but there's a few things that we want to keep, right? And so not every parent can come to the meeting, but they have it at their fingertips if they choose to view it. So.
I'm still very unclear, because I keep hearing about the testing, and maybe I need Marnie's input into this. Everything that came from the state told us that what was on this parent form should not have been allowed. That this was misleading to the parents, that said require testing. Anything delivered in that particular curriculum, that the required testing was inaccurate. And
so
that's what the TEA addressed, because this form was actually presented and said no. And that's so how do we address, because you keep saying
so,
tested.
So
as
again,
long as it's
so
clear.
Okay, so again, Teresa. The only piece that was tested was the science test. I'm hearing what you're saying. The only thing that was tested out of everything in the university was the science test.
Correct.
So we're going to make sure that there's no
that we're being compliant.
Anything we're going to take the science text that we're required to teach on the human sexuality program. So next year, when parents get this letter, it will not say that anything will be tested.
Thank you. Because this, okay?
Does that make sense?
Out of compliance. That's my whole point, is how are we, I thought we had addressed it, and then we keep talking about it being tested in this unit.
So does that make sense? In the 22-23 for next year, there will be nothing tested in the unit.
Good.
The component that is a science text in there right now is going to be pulled. And it'll just be delivered in the regular science class, wherever all other science is delivered. So there will be nothing that says anything will be tested next year, and that will align, as you're saying, to that.
To the TEA.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay? Yes, ma'am.
You know, I was listening to the doctor's comments about children recognizing abuse, and that's why we needed the terms anal sex and oral sex, so that the children could recognize abuse. Is there a way to separate teaching children about abuse, period, like just teaching the child what abuse looks like? Because I do believe people need to understand what abuse looks like, verbal abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. Is there a way to have a separate lesson on teaching a child about abuse that's not part of the sex ed curriculum?
I'm sorry?
I think Franklin.
Is it Franklin? Isn't that covered in our... Yeah, can you share that, please? That's covered somewhere else. Can you share where we cover the programs that we have?
Yes, each year counselors are required to provide guidance lessons to students regarding healthy relationships, safety, abuse of all forms, and what that looks like, and how to advocate for themselves, and how to keep themselves safe and protected. So that's a part of our curriculum that we present each year at the middle and high school and elementary.
On, so that's separate from this.
It's separate.
And on that one, does it include sexual abuse where they're using terminology like oral and oral sex?
I don't know, because I'm not, I don't do that. Does it include, so does that curriculum include the terminology anal and sexual abuse and all that?
It's sexual abuse is listed with a broad definition, but it doesn't go into detail about that. And it also goes back to the fact that they should communicate with a trusted adult as well. So we have that same thing that runs through our lessons as well, communicating with a trusted adult. But it's broad.
Okay. I was asking that because the doctor said that.
Yeah.
That's why you put the definition in this curriculum.
Well, that's not the only reason we put it in there. We put it in there because we teach communicable or STDs. Mm-hmm. And so, again, the parent voice said they wanted, but they wanted scientific medical terms. They didn't want any little puppets and stuff.
It's also legal, because you have
legal
to understand
too.
That we have some students that are in relationships, and if they're in a sexual relationship and their partner has a 3-year age difference, that's illegal. Even though they may have consented in their mind, they're not legally able to consent when there's that age difference. So there's some legal ramifications with children, teenagers, adolescents having sex. So they have to know what is sex.
Another common thread in the subcommittee was offering education at a certain point, but then a safety net as well for other students who don't have the same knowledge level. And I think that a lot of what we're talking about that's outside of the text was that safety net. It was that additional piece that the committee unanimously voted for when the curriculum was implemented, that all SHAC members agreed needed to be part of that education.
Remember, when you look at the lessons, there's only a few that are actually regarding sex or contraceptives or STDs. It really is a whole piece of safety woven all through it.
I think what raises a lot of the parents' concerns is when they would have to go up to the school to be part of the curriculum. I think that tends to just red flag parents and get them worried that,
yeah.
You know,
I understand that. I've heard some of that as well. Ms. Gana, she says what a big piece of it is parents being like they're not able to see everything unless they go up to the school. And so again, I'll just reiterate that's why we went back and said, will you give us permission to also have these two lessons, because those are the ones that we're hearing from that appear to be the most concerned. And parents want to be absolutely sure that they're consenting to, they're opting into those lessons. As Dr. Bergman said, the Scott and White curriculum that we purchase is different from what we purchase typically in a content area. In a content area, we purchase licenses for every single time. We purchase a set for the campus. So there's not a set for every single student. We will continue to work with Scott and White, and if you all hear that there's some other issues that are controversial, you can certainly let us know. And if you feel that the information video is not giving sufficient information for parents to feel comfortable with it, let us know. Because those are things that we can go back and redo the videos. I mean, that we've got the curriculum, right? I mean, that curriculum is set, but we can go back and do the videos to make sure that we are as clear as we can with parents. Just give us that information. That's why when I can probably narrate that part on the STDs and the contraceptives. I've looked at it so many times in the last month. But so I went back and I thought, okay, do we have everything in there that for parents to make an informed decision about this lesson? I do believe that we do. The terminology is in there that you spoke about. It's all in there. But nonetheless, we're going to have a place where the parent can see the whole lesson on the contraceptives and on the STDs.
While you're doing this, could I just, not for discussion, but just offer a few more things for you to look at?
Sure.
Just for feedback. The Let's Talk lessons, some parents felt they had to return them and did not want their information returned, because it doesn't say that you don't have to return it.
Well, make sure it's clear, because she's talking about the Let's Talk lessons that are sent home. We don't need those. Because that's a parent choice. We want to do them, fine. We don't want to do them, fine. That's like the home police. So we will make sure that it's clear that those not need to be returned. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
If their teachers aren't checking to get those back, I would just say make sure that something's going to the parents so that they know they should get a sheet. Because I think sometimes the students don't give them to the parents.
Well, it's in the parent information.
Okay, cool.
It's in the parent information in the packet that they get.
Just so they know they should be getting a sheet.
Yeah. In fact, you can see it in there in your packet. There's an example of one in there. But it's not that. We don't want those. That's a home connection. But thank you. We'll make sure it's clear. I know, I'm right ahead of time. Okay. Any questions, any more comments? Linda.Macias@CFISD.net.
Did every SHAC member get this too? We wanted to make sure that you knew when you could hop up there. And Linda's, Dr. Macias' team did a great job of trying to choose a few different times for you. She gave a morning, a lunchtime, an evening, so hopefully you find something that works for your schedule if you wanted to come and take a look at it. But you'll see, if you do, what Dr. Macias was talking about, how long it would take to go through every single piece of that. So if you think you really want to fine-tune through it, you could come to multiple sessions, so maybe start with the first one if you needed additional time. But there's plenty of time built in there for y'all. So lots of good discussion and things to consider for next year's SHAC for sure. Thank you. Appreciate
y'all.
Thank you, guys.
Okay,
so we're going to take a applause. We'll take our quick lunch break as we usually do in the middle. So our executive chef, Brent Trudeau, is going to tell you what he's made for us today.
Okay, not near as exciting as you probably can. Lunch is ready, so let me tell you what you'll be enjoying. That was a directive, that wasn't a question. There's a tomato basil here, and I've loaded little small pieces of polenta that I fried off in olive oil. Polenta is it's like grits, but it's firm, it's Italian, it's delicious, so if you feel something in there that feels and tastes delicious, that's the polenta. These are cheese stuffed breadsticks here. So if you're just doing a little peckish and don't really want to get after it, just have a little soup and breadsticks or a little of everything. This is a pasta dish. It's very light, it's no heavy sauce involved. It's a bunch of grilled vegetables. Probably easier to go over what's not in here as opposed to what is in here. There's also some capers, some black olives, some grilled chicken. A little bit of salami, lemon juice, garlic. There's some lemon here. So if you want to hit it with a little bit more and a little salt pepper here, you can. Because it's not a real heavy pasta. It's pretty light, kind of a la primavera kind of thing. Salad is romaine, some mixed greens or mixed baby greens. This very fancy carafe I have here is just a little balsamic and olive oil vinaigrette. Just shake it up, use it. This is some cilantro ranch. Moving over to the desserts, this is a peach crisp here. Little serving suggestion. Take our other fancy serving serve. Just kind of go like so. There's no ice cream, but that's incredibly delicious. Just strawberries. You can use that little cream on that as well. The cream is just heavy cream with some vanilla bean and a little bit of sugar. Then snickerdoodles for those who aren't moved by what you see here. If you're wondering where we get our really fancy service utensils, you can find those on www.littlebit.sonoma. But anyway, enjoy. There's anything you don't have, I guess just ask at home. I think we got everything out here, but enjoy. See you guys next time.
Thank you, Brent.
Thank you.
Gotta brag on Brent. He didn't just make the meal, but when you go to the table, you're gonna see how awesome it looks and how great the presentation is. He picks all of that stuff from just outside the building and then decorates the table. So he's amazing. Please, y'all, go and grab your lunch. We'll get started on the next presenter as soon as you've all had a chance to sit down and get started. Good morning, everyone. I'll just go ahead and get started, but you can continue to get your food if you need to. We are going to, I'm Katie Barkholtz. I'm a marketing and special diets coordinator here with Power of Cafe with Nutrition Services, and Emmy Durant, who's our menu planner, will also be presenting. We'll kind of tag team it. And today we'd like to give you an overview of what Nutrition Services does, what we do for the district, and some programs that we have with students as well. I do talk a little bit about careers for RDs, but that's really not the majority of what we'll talk about today. Emmy will go over school lunch and breakfast programs and the regulations and requirements that surround those that then dictate how and what we serve to our students. And then we will also look at our operations at the FPC and some nutrition education programs that we offer, including our Garden Fresh program. We're not going to do special diets. We hit that up last time, nutrition ed, and then marketing and promotions. But first, we had a really neat opportunity several years ago to partner with our media and productions to create a video that was a response to, a comment that we had received, which was along the lines of, well, I bet those people in food service don't even eat the food that they serve. And of course we do. We eat it pretty much every day. I know many of us have had students or our own kids that have gone through SciFair schools that eat breakfast and lunch every day. We're proud of what we do, and we're very proud of what our ladies and gentlemen do. So instead of just shooting off a nastygram, we thought, let's make a movie. So we got to work with them and made this masterpiece here.
What the students think we do.
Nachos with cheese sauce, nachos with cheese sauce, pinto beans, pinto beans, pinto beans, nachos with cheese sauce, nachos with cheese sauce, pinto beans, meatballs, sloppy joe, sloppy joe.
What society thinks we do. What lawmakers think we do. Thank you. Jamie Oliver thinks we do.
Next!
What we think we do.
Students can't learn when they are hungry. Empty belly, fill it up. Power up, cafe.
What we really do.
Do you know Power Up Cafe? Power Up Cafe is the nutrition services arm of Cypress Fairbanks Independent School District. We are a team of 1,200 food service professionals dedicated to serving the needs of our nearly 115,000 students. Our school cafeteria employees ensure that all students have access to safe, nutritious meals each day. The culinary team at our production center supports the school staff by preparing scratch-made menu items and menu components for the over 120,000 meals that our students purchase daily. Literally tons of fresh produce flow through our facility every year. At 5 o'clock in the morning, our fleet of trucks heads out to deliver food to our cafeterias. SciFair has multiple distribution points throughout the area to accommodate the needs of our still-growing student population. The Power Up Cafe office staff includes accountants, human resources staff members, and federal program staff members. Every month, our administrative staff works to plan menus for our students. This group includes 6 registered dietitians, business professionals, hospitality professionals, a classically trained chef, and experts in logistics and warehousing. It takes this diverse group to accomplish our mission of serving quality meals that will appeal to students, satisfy federal requirements, and meet our strict budgetary constraints. At Power Up Cafe, we take this mission seriously. We also take our responsibility to our students seriously. However, we don't take ourselves seriously. We engage our community, our parents, our students and staff members in fun and creative ways to increase participation and provide nutrition and wellness education. We are Power Up Cafe.
So in the video, they mentioned about 115,000. That was made in 2016. So we've grown a little bit. We do serve anywhere from 112, 119, 120,000 meals, breakfast and lunches. This also includes suppers. We've added several supper programs over the last few years. And our ladies and gentlemen do it day in and day out. They do it during summer meals, and they wouldn't be doing anything else. They love it. We do have several individuals with nutrition backgrounds, registered dietitians. Of course, as the video mentioned, we also have business professionals, accounting professionals. We have someone who works in logistics. We have an assistant director of logistics to help get our trucks and our product to and from our production centers and our warehouses. So we do, again, we take our job seriously, but we don't take ourselves seriously. So on the serious note, we're going to be talking a little bit about the nutrition programs, the federal nutrition programs that we run here, and I'll turn it over to Emmy.
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Emmy Durand. I am the menu planner here. I am a registered dietitian, and I have a master's in public health. And I actually interned here in 2007 and apparently never left. So here we are. Now I have 2 students in the district at Hamilton Elementary. So I got a Mother's Day card from my daughter that said, my mom's job is to make school lunches. So that is what we do here. We are focused on school lunches. So some of the federal programs that we offer, that we serve are the National School Lunch Program, the School Breakfast Program. We are open during the summer, and we do follow the Child and Adult Care Food Program, or CACFP, for our pre-K meal pattern as well as our supper meal patterns. So the National School Lunch Program, I might refer to it as NSLP, is a federally assisted meal program that operates in all public schools. Basically, we get money from the government, and the government tells us what we have to serve to get the money. So if we provide well-balanced, low-cost, and free lunches to schools daily, I mean to students daily. So this step happened way back in the 40s, so is whenever the National School Lunch Act was signed. Let's see. For the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, this is kind of set the structure of the meal pattern that we do follow. So we started with the food guide pyramid, and we transitioned to my pyramid and then to my plate that we now use as an example for a well-balanced diet. They are working on the 2020-25 dietary guidelines, so we might have some rules and federal regulations change on us whenever those are complete. So more recently, every 5 years, there's a reauthorization act that comes through Congress, and they can change what we serve, what we do, how we do it. So in 2004, it mandated that we have a local wellness policy. So through the SHAC is the, we recommend what should go in the wellness policy, and then that goes to the board. So in 2004, the Texas Public School Nutrition Policy, y'all might have heard of, or TPSNP, a lot of that had, we had foods of minimal nutritional value, competitive foods. It made regulations for all the fryers to come out of school cafeterias. It also had rules on how much popcorn you could serve, or what size chip bags, what kind of fruit juice or any of that you could serve, how much sugar could be in your milk and whatnot. So we had a lot of regulations that we had to follow with the TPSNP. But with the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010, since that was a federal law, it superseded the TPSNP, and that was rolled back. So now we just follow the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. So it focused on reducing childhood obesity and set standards built upon recommendations from the IOM and the dietary guidelines. So IOM's Institute of Medicine. They put out, the building blocks of child nutrition, I think is what it was called, and that's what a lot of our current meal pattern is based on. Let's see. So part of the changes through the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act is that fruits and vegetables were then separated, because prior to 2010, it was one component, and you could, some school districts, not us, but some school districts would offer all of their fruit and vegetable component is either fruits or vegetables, and not give as much variety as what we do. So the act also increased whole grains. We have to offer only fat-free or low-fat milk. It limited calories based on the age of the children being served. And it also focused on sodium, added sugars, trans fat, and sat fat. Let's see. So Smart Snacks is also something that you might have heard of. That's a nutrition standard for all foods and beverages served outside of the NSLP and school breakfast program. So this went into effect July 1st, 2014. I believe we touched on it last SHAC meeting with Lisa, and we discussed what our recommendations are to adjust our wellness policy. So I'm going to go into the reimbursable meal requirements. So in order for us to receive funding from the government, we have to make sure that our meals meet the federal requirements. So of that requirement, we have to offer 5 components. And students that are coming through the line, they must take at least 3. And one of those 3 must be a fruit or a vegetable. Prior to 2010, they didn't have to have a fruit or vegetable. They just had to have 3 components on their tray, which could have just been a milk and a slice of pizza. But now it would be a milk, a slice of pizza, and a salad, or an apple, or whatnot. We also implement offer versus serve so that students can choose what is on their plate, because research shows that if students have the ability to make the decision, that they are more likely to eat it. So, like I said, 5 components. What are those 5 components? Kind of follows the My Plate pattern. We have meat alternate. So beef, turkey, chicken, or other meats. We have soy products, cheese, yogurt, or eggs. Also, nuts and seeds are also in there. Grains like rice, pasta, bread, tortillas, fruit, any fresh or frozen fruits, and vegetables. And Since 2010, we've had subgroups of vegetables. So on our menus, you see lots of carrots, lots of grape tomatoes, lots of romaine, so that we can hit all of these components, the dark green, red, orange, dried bean, starchy veg, and then also other and additional veg, as well as fluid milk. Fluid milk is one of the five components. So this is kind of hard to read from the back, I'm sure, but this is the meal pattern that we must follow. So we see we have the breakfast meal pattern on the left and the lunch meal pattern on the right. So this is what we follow. If you can see down here, the sodium targets, like we have to make sure our meals for K through five are less than or equal to 540 milligrams of sodium per meal. One cup of milk is 120 milligrams of sodium, is that right?
You know what? I don't know.
I think that's right. So anyway, so that includes naturally occurring sodium currently. So we are within these guidelines because we have this central production facility that allows us to make things from scratch. So we can control the amount of sodium that goes into our food because we're able to make them from scratch. So a sign like this would be up at all the school cafeterias. If a student takes everything that they are offered, it is a nice size tray. Like this is an example of a tray. This is two beef tacos, soft tacos. We have seasoned pinto beans, baby carrots, apple slices, and milk. And all that can be taken as part of a meal. And on top of that, you can even still take another fruit. So we allow them to take a full cup of fruit and a full cup of vegetable on top of any entree that we're serving as well. So I'm going to send it back to Katie, and then she's going to talk about more of our program.
Emmy had mentioned that we operate under federal guidelines, and so we also receive the majority of our funding comes from federal funding. We sell a meal. We have to justify and prove that that meal is a reimbursable meal based on the criteria that Emmy had discussed. And we do that by we make sure that every single one of our schools are seen by our supervisors and audited once a year. And we also get audited by the state every 3 to 5 years. And we have to have documentation in the form of food production records and training and a number of other things to justify and prove that, yes, we are running our program correctly. Yes, we are in compliance. Yes, we did sell 120,000 meals this day for this amount of reimbursement. And again, it is from federal dollars. The local dollars typically we of course want those to stay with the schools. So we receive federal funding. These are reimbursement rates for breakfast and lunch. I think it was a little bit different in the video. And of course, we have to pretty much be financially responsible for everything that we do. Any money that comes into our program, we have to use it for our program. I don't know if the Shack has ever had an opportunity, certainly probably not in the last couple of years, to do a tour of the FPC. It is an incredible operation that we have here. I think the building was built in back in the 80s, in the mid to late 80s, and the gentleman who, it was his idea, I think he had come from the military, and he said, we are going to, if we build a center that's going to be able to standardize recipes and make things in bulk and be able to ship things in bulk, ultimately it's going to pay for itself and we're going to save money in the future, and that's exactly what happened. So it does afford us an opportunity to cut our costs. We are able to standardize our recipes here, so what goes to a high school, one high school is going to be the same that goes to another high school, elementary and middle school as well. It also helps us to standardize our HACCP process for the food production center, and then of course we have HACCP processes, food safety processes that we do in the school as well, and we're really able to keep a tight eye on it here in our production center. So this dry warehouse that's just next door, including this building, I think was built and completed in about 2015, and so we used to have a dry warehouse that was maybe a few miles from here off campus, and again, this we're able to centralize things, and we've always had a fleet of trucks, but now they're much closer, so it's been a great benefit to just our operations to be able to have all of us under one roof here. So our bakery, those delicious cinnamon rolls that sometimes will smell coming up to work, or that you see most Mondays in your students' schools. We bake about 27,000 of them each week in our production center in our bakery. We bake our own kolaches with whole grains, our own whole wheat rolls, and our muffins as well. And we have a seasonal muffin. I think right now it's banana blueberry, blueberry banana muffin. In the fall, we do a spice muffin. We always do our pumpkin muffin for Thanksgiving. That's very popular. And so all of those are made by hand, by scratch, or from scratch in our production center. Here are just a couple aerial views that we can see. There's a catwalk around our production center as well. So just in case you're curious. We are able to control exactly what goes into the items we make here from scratch. As much as possible, if we can get creative, we like to come up with new home style items. We do make our own marinara and spaghetti sauce here. We make our own nacho cheese sauce here.
Taco sauce.
What?
Taco meat.
Oh, taco meat. So if we're able to do it here, we prefer to do that, again, just because we can control it. We can control cost, and gives us that creative ability. If you've been to a school, you might have seen some of the salads or enjoyed them yourselves. We had to cut back on several of them after or during the pandemic, and so I think we're slowly starting to bring some of them back and have them be kind of seasonal offerings. Right now it's the cranberry apple salad. Packaging department is, so if you've been to a pre-dish school, if your student goes to a pre-dish school where things are separately packaged because of the way the school is set up, then you've probably seen your fruit in a little sealed package there. Again, it's the same type of fruit that you're going to get at a traditional school, but because they have fewer servers, and so we have no sneeze guards, not a traditional service line, everything is going to be covered. Just a little illustration about how we do our nachos. So the nachos that students love, of course, my daughters love them in elementary. It's usually a pretty big service day in middles and high schools. We do all of that here. And the way we do it for pre-dish and the way we do it for traditional is a little bit different. The cheese goes into the bags here. We have kind of a cook-chill system where we cook it in our big our big steam kettles there. We put them in bags, and then they get tumble chilled. And either they get packed out and sent to the schools, or they get sent to our pre-dish department, where they are scooped in correct scoop sizes with the beef or with just cheese, since we offer both of those options. They're sealed, sent out to the schools, and then they're cooked at the school. So it's a pretty big process for some of those pre-dish items. And I'm going to run through a few other things that, I guess, services that we offer or things that we have done. So, of course, with crisis operations, if they're during Harvey, we were able to serve for a couple of weeks while school was closed. Of course, during COVID, we had our operations when everything was closed, and we also offered curbside service all the way until December 17th of 2021. We still offered that for students who were going to school virtually. Everyone is experiencing supply chain disruptions, and so we handle them as gracefully as we possibly can. And so many times if we have that disruption in an item that we normally always receive, like our pizza boxes for our pre-dish schools, we get creative and we test a couple things out, and we find, hey, we can use bakery bags to make sure that the pizzas are put in a way that students can get them from their lunch line at pre-dish, and they won't be touching just open pizza. So that was just for some short amount of time, and our staff did it, and we've gone back to boxes now, but so we've kind of had to make that change pretty quickly and make that turn, and it's a good thing we were able to go back to it as well. So one of the big pieces of Emmy's job, and also mine, is we are able to offer nutrition education opportunities and partner with different departments here in Cyfair. What time is it? How much time do I have?
It's noon.
Okay, I'm going to run through these really quickly. One of our biggest programs, though, that touches PE here in Nutrition Services, and we also partner with a master gardener called Ready to Grow Gardens, is our Garden Fresh program. So each month we highlight a different produce. This month it's potatoes, and typically the gardens that you see at many of the schools, Postma has a garden, Wells has a garden, Samson, Walker, they all have these beautiful, robust gardens. They are harvesting that fruit or vegetable that we are highlighting. And then we serve it on the first Friday of that month in elementary school. Sometimes we also have the opportunity to do it in middles and high schools. We have Nutrition Ed with those posters. We also have a Google site that we offer to our PE teachers to teach in elementary schools that will highlight that fruit or vegetable. It'll talk about activity as well. And of course, they're the experts on kind of putting those two things together. We, the last couple of years, have had an opportunity to partner with local producers. And we are a giant district. We serve a lot of potatoes or a lot of carrots, but we can procure a good portion of some of those produce items to serve in our cafeterias. The most recent one, we served these beautiful rainbow carrots back in February when we were highlighting carrots from Gunderman Acres. I'm gonna skip through a lot of this because it is noon. There might be another opportunity for us to talk about this. One thing though is, we've talked about our blender bikes. So, okay, we talked about food tasting. The next thing we have coming up is summer meals, and so I think that will be on our website soon. We offer free summer meals to our communities at certain sites. That also coincides with a lot of summer school as well. So I don't want to go over because I know we have a subcommittee meeting. You're welcome to email me any questions, and I think we're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll definitely bring you back.
All right. Thank you.
We kind of touched just briefly last month about some of the child nutrition guidelines, and so we wanted to give you some more information about what they do. There's so much more. There's more even than what she said today. So I'm sure we'll have her back. So thank you again, everyone who came today. We appreciate you being here. We appreciate you serving CFISD students. We look forward to future conversations and future meetings that we will have. For those of you who are on the physical fitness planning subcommittee, if you stick around, we will still have that subcommittee meeting, but otherwise, we will see all of you again next school year. I'll email you all the dates in advance. We already have those scheduled. They'll be up on the CFISD website, that same page I always direct you to, where we post the agendas and have all of the meetings. So all of that will be available to you just in the next couple of weeks so that you can plan for next year. Okay, well, thank you everybody for coming, and we'll just have subcommittee stick around.